Thanks for tuning in to Best Show Ever, a podcast presented by the Englert Theatre. On this week's episode, we talk about putting art to work with Carla Baudrins, founder of Art Office. Then we hear from Michael and Vicky Lensing, co-owners of Lensing Funeral Home. They'll tell us a bit about what it's like working with grief and experiencing arts in Iowa City. After what's felt like a billion years, the Englert Theatre is opening its doors back up to the public on September 15th. We're partnering up with Film Scene on the Ped Mall to provide guided tours of our newly renovated spaces from 3 to 7 p.m. So bring a friend, snap some pics, and most importantly, feel proud of what we've accomplished together. Find more information at englert.org/events. We can't wait to see you guys. Carla Baudrins is the founder of Art Office, a 12-week accountability program designed to help artists work. It's currently a virtual program, but ultimately, Carla dreams of having a brick-and-mortar hub where artists can rent office cubicles and work side-by-side. After several successful work sessions and a bounty of rave reviews, Carla is now doing some fundraising to cover operating costs, provide scholarships, upgrade equipment, and more. When you inevitably fall in love with this program like I have, consider donating at artofficestudios.com/fundraiser. Carla, it's been a long time coming. I'm so excited to meet you today and finally have you on this podcast.
It's so good to be here. So good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay. What is Art Office and how did it come to be? Give us the origin story.
All right. Well, basically what happened was I realized after years and years of having a sporadic and often dead art life, I realized that what I needed was more structure. I needed a system, I guess. And I started putting together in my mind and on paper a plan for, you know, a way that could help my artist block, basically. And it became Art Office. And I, you know, asked people all along the way, like, what do you think if, what do you think about the idea of working together, but not, you know, not with each other, but like alongside each other, like in cubicles? And a lot of people who worked in cubicles already were like, I don't like that idea. And a lot of people who, you know, were on in my zone who had never worked in a cubicle setting before, really liked the Office TV show, you know, it was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And so I just kind of snowballed with that idea. And it became what it is today, which is a program. It's for artists, and it is based on some principles, based on personal responsibility, peer accountability, and public engagement. And it's kind of basically like asking artists to think of their creative lives and art practices like a 9-to-5 office job, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Giving structure to the artistic practice, finding like the in-between balance of like the discipline of a workplace, but like,
yeah,
beauty, the freedom
yeah.
of the art.
Exactly. In the beginning, I kind of put it like that almost exactly, that it was like, an office workplace meets an art studio.
Hmm.
So that's my vision for it anyway, is that it can eventually, hopefully one day when we can have a brick and mortar, it'll be an office place where you can actually come in and rent a cubicle.
Mm. Hope. Oh yeah. That sounds amazing. I mean, as soon as I found out about Art Office, I'm like, oh, if I had just, I adore the idea. And I mean, working alongside other people
like you said, even if you're not collaborating with them, like having other people's energies and the accountability in the room, because art can be very solitary, which some people like about it. Others, myself, less. So yeah, I got really stoked about the idea right out of the gate.
And like you said, you know, one thing that I have kind of come up against during the formation of Art Office is, you know, people thinking that it's a collaboration tool, or it's a, you know, a club, or some kind of a social, you know, get together of artists. And that's actually not what it is at all. I really have actually tried to stay away from that, because the only thing that we want to facilitate is individual artists getting art done, just simply working on their own art, which is a lot, you know, easier said than done. It can be, artist block is real. It can be really hard to get over a hump of not feeling, you know, inspired, and just Art Office makes you push through that and gives you the tools to do that with, and it really works.
Yeah, I love the specific examples of, you know, the incentive structure, you know, making it feel like an actual like workspace, almost tongue in cheek at moments, which just like makes it more fun. Time cards, checks, like check vouchers, awards. And the one I love the most, the practice of valuing your time and work as an artist, which is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, it really is. And something so interesting that I've discovered as part of making Art Office is, like, it seems to me like the people who need Art Office the most are, you know, struggling. They struggle. They are not cut out to be their own boss. And I want to take away like that stigma that like every artist should be their own boss, because I really don't think that that's true. I think that probably the majority of artists out there just weren't cut out to do that. And it seems like people come in who struggle already with feeling like they're not the greatest artist because they can't keep track of their, you know, their time or their you know, their projects or whatever, as well as they could with a manager or a boss over them. So they're already feeling lower than usual, and they tend to, you know, put that that tends to reflect in their hourly rate that they choose, you know, where probably someone who is, you know, confident and like is their own boss and has been doing really well would feel more comfortable to put a higher rate on it, even though the artwork itself is the same, or, you know, of the same value. It's very interesting to me, and something that I just really want to communicate, you know, throughout the whole, every session is, you know, your work is valuable, and you should, you know, think of it as valuable and not downplay yourself just because you don't have this amazing ability to be your own boss, because so few people do.
I'm feeling so validated right now.
Because
that is, yeah, that is something I struggle with. And I mean, it really is probably, you know, due to capitalism, I don't know, or society that just maybe doesn't value art as much as it should. But it feels like you have to be this entrepreneurial powerhouse if you want to make make things happen with your art, which, yeah, I mean, is just not easy, particularly too for people of color. I feel like women, queer people, you know, to just come out of the gate, like having the confidence and the aggressiveness and audacity to value themselves as they should be valued.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to have this structure in place to value those artists is in that way and provide that support, like as a leader, you know, almost a boss figure is.
Right.
That's really cool. Very interesting. Yeah. I didn't look at it that way. What has the feedback been like so far from your employees, if you will?
Overwhelmingly, people have loved it. It has changed some people's lives for the better, myself included. A lot of people have returned and done multiple sessions. There's a whole testimonials page on our website where people, you know, have written about what Art Office has meant and been for them. And they just all seem to say that it works. It has worked for them. It helped them overcome, you know, hang-ups in their personal lives to just get art made and finish projects and start projects and feel better about their progress. So it's definitely working for the people who have applied themselves to the program for sure.
Oh, that must just be the most absolutely beautiful thing to witness and help facilitate.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing. I think I said this earlier that I really made Art Office for myself, you know? Like I made it to you know, scratch my own itch, and the fact that it has done that for so many other people, it's just mind-blowing. And I'm all about like making, you know, trying to spread the word and like help other people. 'Cause if it can do for other people what it's done for me and the folks who've already done it, man, it could really help a lot of people.
Well, thank you so much for sharing a little bit about this amazing project, revolutionary project with us. Love what you're doing and keep it up.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ellie.
We'll be right back in conversation with Michael and Vicky Lensing after a quick word from our development director, Katie Roche.
Did you know that you could be promoting your business, organization, or event to Best Show Ever podcast listeners by placing an ad here on the show? Sponsoring Best Show Ever or other Englert programming ties your brand to a local legacy, the Englert Theater. And your support of the Englert now means more than ever before. In 2020, we experienced a significant revenue shortfall brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. Through this financially tumultuous time, we're producing new digital productions, including this podcast, our Stages concert series, and Witching Hour Festival, all to inspire positive community growth through the arts. Packages range from $100 on up. Our investment in the arts community is only possible with support from sponsors like you, and art supporters are known for supporting those that support the arts. Visit englert.org/sponsorship for all of the information about how to advertise. I mean, you're listening right now. Place your ad here, englert.org/sponsorship.
Michael and Vicky Lensing have co-owned and operated Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service since 1978. They're both incredibly active in the Iowa City and Cedar Rapids communities, serving on boards such as the Visiting Nurses Association, Iowa City Public Library Foundation, Elder Services, Reading Recovery Council of Iowa, and too many more to name. Full disclosure, the Lensings are previous sponsors of this podcast. All right, you two, thank you so much for taking some time out of your super busy schedule to come on the Best Show Ever podcast today.
Thank you for inviting us.
We're happy to be here.
Awesome. Okay, so I know this might be hard, but can you briefly describe what it looks like, what it means to guide a family through the process of caring for physical remains and planning a service?
Well, I think whenever a family calls us, they're putting their trust in us to follow through with whatever they need to do to say goodbye to their loved one. And that's different for everyone. And, you know, even in a family of five, there may be five different needs we need to meet for them. So the job of the funeral director is to try and open that door with the family so that everyone can verbalize or at least make known what their needs are, whether it's religious, spiritual, family relationships, whatever it is they need to do so that they can say goodbye to their loved one.
And also, in today's terms, a lot of people really want to celebrate a life. And so it's really their way of, for some it may be more traditional, for others it may be more non-traditional, but it's all in a way of saying goodbye and remembering someone.
I think the remembering part is important because through the process, it brings up memories, which is the best way then to relate to that person who has died, not only for the family, but the friends. I think sometimes friends are forgotten in the process because they're not related. They're not in that first circle of connectivity to the person. But I think it's trying to figure out for everyone, what do I need to say goodbye to this person who had a special place in my life?
I think probably speaking for a lot of people, you know, the first thing that would come to my mind, if I was thinking about myself, you know, in this line of work, I feel like it would have to be very emotionally taxing. Would you say that is your experience? Because of course, obviously grief is just, you know, an immense emotional experience for people, and to guide people through that journey in a sense, I have to imagine has to be difficult for yourselves as well.
I think for our own personal emotions, yeah, I personally struggle with that a lot. Partially because it doesn't take much for me to just welled up and start crying. And I think I've seen a lot over the years. But I also think maybe that's okay too, because that's what maybe makes me. It makes you more compassionate and maybe more understanding and more caring. Sometimes it can be a struggle to balance that emotion between your professional role and your personal role. And I think as long as you're aware of it, I would venture to say that most funeral directors, most many caregivers don't take good care of themselves. Self-care is not probably, because it's so built into you to care for others that you'll take care of somebody else before you would really think about taking care of you. That's not healthy, but that's, I think, probably right. Pretty true.
Well, so I think sharing emotions with a family is okay. I grew up in Iowa City, so a lot of times these are people that I've grown up with or known. And so we have that relationship. And so I think it's okay then to share that it's hard on you as well to say goodbye. I also think there are some that are difficult no matter what. I think when it's a child, or I think, you know, someone who's young, or something tragic, or something unexpected. And there's no way you can prepare for that. I mean, even for us, we kind of know what we're supposed to be doing or how we're supposed to be helpful, but you can't erase how you feel either. And I think sometimes that's a good connection then to share with a family, because I think they're worried about what they're doing and what they're feeling. And so in a way we can model some of that and also share with them, you know, look, this is tough. There's nothing we can say that's going to make it any easier, but we're going to try and help you figure out what you need to do.
Yeah. I feel that this is a line of work similar to the, you know, doctors, or I have a friend who's an EMT, and you know, they're always very compassionate, empathetic. You know, they're doing what they do because they care about people so deeply,
but that also is the biggest challenge because you're dealing with.
Sometimes I think it's a privilege too, because families entrust us not only with the care of their loved one, but they will share stories and information mm-hmm. with us, not being part of the family, right. but as they're going through their process and trying to figure out what they need for an obituary or just telling stories as part of grief, they will share things with us that I think we are privileged that they would allow us, you know, to know that intimate part of their family life or about that person.
In our culture, it seems it's a little bit taboo to imagine death, talk about death in our day-to-day conversations. As two people who are constantly interacting with death, what are your thoughts about that?
I actually think it's gotten better than when we first started, you know, nobody wanted to talk about death. And then I think.
And there were very few books about death or death and dying or grief.
And it was always usually negative. And I think over time, and maybe that's as generations have changed, but I think often if we would be out at a party or we'd be out socially, everyone wanted to ask us questions about, well, what do you do if, or, you know, what is this about? And so I felt like sometimes when we would be out, we monopolize the conversation just by answering their questions. And this was supposed to be a social event.
Vicky, you have a very robust history of providing grief-related programs, educational resources. What would you pitch as, you know, the main benefit of grief education, or why are you passionate about grief education?
So two things. One, I think teaching people that it's okay to express their feelings, there's no right or wrong way to go through grief. Everyone is going to be different and do it in their own way, in their own time. And so when we do in support groups, we'll talk about, you know, the rules for grief. Basically, there are no rules. There are no timelines. Everyone does it differently. And I think, two, encouraging people, adults, to discuss with children, you know, what grief is, what death is like, answer their questions. Because I think we saw with our children, death comes to people at younger and younger ages. So it's not like, you know, you wait till someone is 18 years old to talk about it. You need to talk about it when they're young. So it becomes part of the natural cycle of life. And kids will ask questions. And I think as adults, we don't want to over answer. But on the other hand, if they've got questions, you'd rather give them the information than have them be afraid or wonder about it or, you know, go elsewhere to get the wrong information.
I think it's funny. I'll tell you a very quick story. But one of our kids are like 40, 38, and 36. Did I get that right? Okay. great. When we moved to this location in 1984, our kids were very much younger. But they used to come down and we'd mow the yard and all this stuff. And I remember once after we had bought a house, Vicky calls me and she said, Michael, she goes, I was mowing the yard and I hit a rabbit's nest and a little baby rabbit died. And so the kids wanted to do something. So they brought the kids. She brought the kids down and they brought the rabbit and, you know, they brought the rabbit down. The rabbit was in a little McDonald's Happy Meal box. That was like a treasure chest to them. And I said, so what did we do? So we went and dug a hole in the back. And I said, well, what do you think we should do? And they said, well, we should probably say a prayer. And I said, okay. I said, what do you want to do? And they said, they did a prayer that we, a luncheon prayer that, you know, we would, it's something very, not a funeral prayer, you know. And then we're looking for flowers that we could put on. I do think for kids, many times there's just this innate thing to say goodbye. They maybe don't know what it's all about, but, you know, I remember as a child, we'd have goldfish. It was really strange that would die. And my mother had these little jewelry boxes. This is going way back from stores. We'd put the goldfish in there. We'd go out in the yard and then we'd dig a hole. And I mean, I think there's this part that some people would find that really strange, but I think it's was very healthy, you know. It is interesting. But some people do. Some parents, I think, get really freaked out by that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to ask, you know, what is this last year been like for you two and your business?
I think very surreal. There's actually things that I wish sometimes I think what's what happened, I think there's some things that have been good. I mean, like we've had more, there was more intimacy sometimes amongst services, you know, it's like people will get concerned sometimes about, oh, I don't know that many people will be there and blah, blah, blah. Well, during COVID, you know, there were times we maybe have 10 people and that's all we could have, but people did things. And so we had about 80, we had about 80 funeral COVID related deaths, plus our other calls at the time. And, you know, and some of the most meaningful ones were the most simple. I mean, it might have been something very traditional that we didn't cremate. The body was present. The family would come in. I mean, I had a friend who had a sister that passed away, and the person did pass of COVID. They weren't able to be there with her. And so on the way to the facility where this happened, I called this person and we got to talking and I said, when did you get last to see them? And they said, it's been 2 to 3 weeks and they could only look in the window. So on the way back, I knew I was close to their house and I said, you know, I'll be all gowned up and everything, but if you want me to, I can pull into your driveway and if you want to come out. And he said, oh, so they came out.
And got to say goodbye.
And with that said, then we proceeded to actually, they had a traditional service and saw her and everything. But
I think early on when people were thinking they would just wait until this was over to do something, but then it just didn't end. And you know, some chose not to do anything. And I feel badly that
me too.
that was their choice because
it just got longer and longer.
Yeah. And then I think they felt it was too long to try and circle back and do something. Or, you know, sometimes at the time of death, sometimes that's when family and friends are close by. And I would say to families, if it were me, you know, they would say, well, what would you do? I said, if it were me, I would do something now. It may not be everyone, but it's the people you're close to that are here right now. And you can do something and say goodbye. That doesn't mean you can't, when things,
still a lot of things
clear now, up. Right? Yeah. That you can't do something, you know, a little larger later on, but, you know, you need to do what you need to do now. Mm-hmm.
Well, I could certainly talk to you guys all day about unpacking these stories and the knowledge you have.
There's somebody else you could talk to.
No, you guys have been wonderful. I have one last question for both of you.
Yes.
And this is the best show ever portion of the Best Show Ever podcast. I have to ask you, what has been your favorite live event experience in Iowa City? Arts experience.
One of my great things was seeing David Sedaris at the Englert, who is totally off color and lovely. And in recent years at Hancher, seeing Diana Ross was absolutely superb. And I don't go to a lot of things. I just kind of am really picky, but we are very blessed to live in this town and be able to have the things we have. It'll be nice to see that back again.
So I grew up with a mom who was active in the theater and community theater and grew up, you know, performing all through school. And so I really enjoy live theater and miss that. But I think for me, it was when our kids were then old enough and they participated, you know, it was like generational. So I'd seen my mom on stage and we'd been on stage and now to see our kids on stage and just the feelings on both sides when you're on stage and you're giving to the audience and then in the audience to be receiving that, to me, it's just, that's what the arts are all about. And it's been a long year with COVID not to have that experience. I am so excited to get that back again, because I think, you know, when you're on stage, every performance is different. You give something different at each performance and you get something in the audience that's different each time. And so I think when you're just an arts fan, it's been such a void not to have that, not to be able to go to a museum, not to go to an art show, not to go to a play, not to go to a movie. I said to my husband the other night, you know, I am so anxious. We have not been to a movie in how long. We need to get back to doing that. Those are the things I think that in Iowa City, when you're used to having and suddenly it's gone, it leaves this huge empty space. And so yeah. I think people probably are going to be so glad to get all of that back.
I want to thank you both again for making this work in your schedule. It's been such a pleasure talking with both of you.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Take care of your bike.
Our song of the week is Sad Stories from the Iowa City band Anthony Warden and the Illiterati. Full disclosure, I collaborate frequently with this band. The group includes the legend himself, Anthony Warden, along with Aaron Knight on drums, Avery Moss on keys, and Capel Howarth on bass. They've been quietly and dutifully working away at a full-length album to be released later this year. The song you're about to hear is the single for the album, and if you like it, I can pretty much guarantee you'll be blown away by the rest of the album. They've got a slew of shows coming up across the Midwest, so be sure to follow them on social media for updates and check them out. Their live shows are amazing. Here it is, Sad Stories from Anthony Warden and the Illiterati.
I was hanging around with Rico at the Port of No Good Cummings. We were talking about persuasion and welcome rearranging. Cause if you shiver, your soul can live. If you smile, it's not denied. Find a heart.
Bye. Serving the Iowa City area, Martin Construction was voted Best Home Improvement Company by Little Village in 2019 and 2020. Martin Construction is here to improve your home and lifestyle, incorporating the best design, products, workmanship, service, and trade partners, and with the lowest impact on your personal and global environment. Visit them online at andrewmartinconstruction.com. Martin Construction, member of the Greater Iowa City Home Builders Association and Johnson County Affordable Housing Coalition. Support for this podcast comes from Friends of the Englert. To learn more, visit englert.org/friends. Ongoing support provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Iowa Arts Council, a division of the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs. And by the United States Regional Arts Resilience Fund. Phase 1 is an initiative of Arts Midwest and its peer United States Regional Arts Organizations, made possible by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation.